Well, thank you again for that. Well, here in session number two, we want to spend a little bit of time, and this session might be just a titch shorter than our first one because we were trying to lay so much foundation. But what we're going to do in this session is talk about building connection in our marriage. And I think that connection in marriages is critically important. And when I think about connection, what I'm thinking about is both spiritual connection, physical connection, emotional connection. I'm thinking about just being connected to your spouse, being connected to who they are and to their story. And that one of the primary ways I find that people build connection in marriage is through listening and empathy and through asking good questions. And so we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about that. We're going to spend the balance of our time at the end of the session talking about the role of expectations in marriage. I think expectations in marriage is something that we don't talk enough about. And in many ways, what we're trying to do is set up a foundation because in the third session, we're going to talk about conflict. And I'm sure all of us have conflict in marriage. If you don't, come talk to me afterwards so I can learn all your secrets. But we're going to talk about conflict. And we really need this session to kind of help us have something to have that session grow out of. So when we think about building connection in marriages, I find a lot of times that when couples have been married for, let's say, more than 4 or 5 years, that oftentimes we can get what I call just static knowledge of our spouse. We can get kind of lazy when it comes to knowing our spouse. I don't do very much premarital counseling. It's not a type of counseling that I really enjoy, just because oftentimes, you know, a guy and a girl are coming. They have their hearts set on getting married, and everything you're kind of telling them is going in one ear and going out the other. They have no problems. They found the perfect person that completes them. Zero conflict. They're willing to make any sacrifice for the person that's on the couch with them. And it's just not real life. And I try my best to help set them up for that. But then oftentimes, because there is so much, I would just say, investment for that relationship, it oftentimes is surprising that once you get married, right, a lot of that investment in knowing your spouse, knowing who they are, what makes them tick, what their favorite foods are, what their favorite restaurant is, their favorite place to go, it's kind of like after the wedding, it's like it takes a very steep dive downward. And we kind of just get very comfortable in terms of what we know about our spouse. But when we do that, when we actually fail to learn more about who we're married to, even if you've been married for a long time, there are a few things that can happen. A lot of times you can have a caricature of who your spouse is or how they'll react when that's no longer the case, right? Most people are dynamic. They don't just stay the same, and they develop different responses or different preferences. And so who you met might be different 5 years down the road. And if you're not keeping up with that, if you're not getting to know your spouse and asking good questions, that might be a surprise to you. It can remove an opportunity then for thoughtful and engaging prayer. If you don't know your spouse, you don't know what's on their heart or what's weighing on them, well then, how are you praying for them? How are you going before the Lord and lifting them up if you don't know who they are? And also, it can provide missed opportunities for loving engagement. And again, sometimes I think that in marriage, we can find ourselves in some of those ruts where we just think we know our spouse, we get very comfortable with them, and we don't do enough to build a robust connection. And so what I want to talk about is then, what does it truly mean to know our spouse? And I want to give you a simple illustration that I use, and it uses one of my favorite foods, a cheeseburger. The first thing I did when I flew in last night was go to In-N-Out and get a cheeseburger because we don't have those in Ohio. But I love a good burger, and when you think about a cheeseburger, at least in my opinion, what makes for the perfect bite is when you have all of those elements present, right? I don't want a no-carb burger, right, that's wrapped in lettuce. I don't really think that that's a burger, right? I want everything. I want the carbs. I want everything that makes a good burger. And when you think about relationships, when you think about especially your relationship with your spouse, I kind of like to liken it to a cheeseburger, right? You might think of like the top bun of a cheeseburger is what I just call everyday conversation. It's the thin part of your relationship. When you talk about, hey, we're with each other through thick and thin, right? The thinness is just, hey, we have to talk to each other. We have to do logistics. Who's taking Bobby to soccer practice? Hey, are you going to run to the grocery store? It's what I would call small talk. Sometimes we can kind of make small talk not that important. We can think that small talk is not as holy or as important as deeper conversations, but I actually think for most couples, right, if they're trying to dive down and have deep conversations, but they don't have good small talk in their relationship, it's actually quite a deep dive. It's like getting dumped into the deep end of the pool. So having good, just everyday conversation, I think, is critically important. Marriage therapists will tell you that good everyday conversation typically has four touch points, that every single day there should be four touch points of conversation. Good morning, goodbye, hello when you come back from work, and good night. Now, it's kind of truncated, obviously, but you can kind of see the movement of that conversation, that you greet one another when you wake up, you tell each other goodbye when you leave for work, you welcome each other when you come home from your work, and you tell each other good night. Now, everybody in this room, I'm fairly confident you can do that. If you want to build better connection in marriage, that is a very simple way that if you're not doing that already, can build better relationship, right? If you're having chronic conflict in your marriage and every conversation just ends in conflict, one of the first things I'll tell my clients is, let's just start off with these four touch points. Good morning, goodbye, hello, and good night. You'd be surprised how many couples don't do that. How many couples go to bed and they don't tell each other good night or I love you, or when couples come home and they don't greet one another? But that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about that top bun conversation. Good morning, goodbye, hello, good night. The middle part of a burger, right, the real meat and cheese of it is just, I would say it's cultivating life together, right? Good conversation hopefully comes out of just a shared life together, right? It's not the roommate life, right? I see a lot of couples have what I call the roommate life, where they're each just completely separate. They each have their own domains, and there's not connection. There's not intersection together. And so they might have good everyday conversation, but outside of that, they don't really do anything together. And friends, I think in order to have good knowledge and good connection of your spouse, you need to have this middle part, just cultivating new things together. Sharing hobbies together. I had a client in the other day, and he's just obsessed with video games, and he'll go into his room and just play video games for hours and hours on end, and just zero time together for them as a couple. And so part of what we're trying to do is we're trying to get them to cultivate just a life together, right? Hey, you got to come out of your man cave for at least a couple of hours and attend and speak and converse and build relationship with your spouse. Now, that gets us into the bottom bun. The bottom bun is what I would call is the thick part of conversation or the thick part of relationship. It's, hey, what's on your heart? What makes you tick? Why do you do what you do? It's the deep, meaningful, emotionally connected type of conversation that I think a lot of times when we think about thriving marriages, this is hopefully a strength for them. Now, you can begin to see where if you don't have the first two parts, right, if you don't have the top bun and all of the toppings and the burger, how going down to the bottom bun can feel like diving into the deep end of the pool, right? You can even begin to tell, even in some ways, maybe gender stereotypes or caricatures, that husbands, you might feel more comfortable at the top, right, swimming in like the kiddie side of the pool, and the wife maybe is after what, right? She's after that deep, meaningful conversation. So you got to meet in the middle on that, right? You have to find ways that you can meaningfully connect, and that's where I oftentimes will encourage couple towards that middle part of the burger, right? Developing shared interest and shared hobbies together. So two simple, accessible ways that we can begin to know our spouses, and these two things, again, aren't going to surprise you, but they are probably going to surprise you in that most people I see in marriage counseling, these two things are just completely absent from the relationship. Two ways that you can get to know your spouse: ask good questions and be a good listener. One of my favorite commentators says this about conversation, and especially about marriage conversation. He says, when you enter into a room and you see your spouse, he said, you should be a there you are type of person, not a here I am type of person. Let me say that again. In marriage, right, if we're trying to build connection and you're entering into conversation with your spouse, be the type of person that is a there you are, not a here I am. Right? Sometimes when we go into a room or go into a conversation with our spouse, we can naturally, I think, gravitate towards it's all about us. But what would it look like in marriage if we stopped being here I am type of people and we started to be there you are? I'm so glad to be able to see you. I want to catch up with you. What was your day like? What was hard for you? What did the kids do? Where did you go? How was work, right? Being a there you are type of person. And again, how do we get there? Is through asking good questions. I'm actually surprised in marriage how little question asking we do. Not like top bun type of conversation of like, hey, are you going to pick up bread today from the grocery store? But meaningful questions about, hey, how are you doing, right? And that how are you doing doesn't get answered in a false type of way of like fine or, you know, same as always, but genuinely gets answered, right? Be a person who is willing to ask good questions. And again, we've talked about this, I think, the last time I came when we talked about helping other people change, that growing in our ability to ask questions is, again, another way that we image Christ. Christ is the consummate question asker, constantly moving and in prodding into people's lives. So get yourself comfortable with asking questions of your spouse. You know, one of the things I think that would be fascinating, right, would be fascinating to come out of something like this is even to ask your spouse to say, hey, what is a question that if I were to ask you would be meaningful to you, right? Maybe you don't know what questions to ask. You don't know if maybe questions will tick your spouse off or will be annoying to them. So ask a question about the question. Say, hey, when I come home, is there something that I could do or something that I could say that would be most meaningful to you, right? Instead of I come home from a long day of work and I just expect you to wait on me or serve me, is there something different I could do? Or right, a wife could ask it in the inverse and she could say, hey, when you come home from work, what could I do or what could I say that would be most helpful or beneficial? Right, simple question, but friends, what that question is going to do is it's going to get you some mileage in your relationship. It's going to help build connection. Not only do we want to ask good questions, but we also want to be people who listen well. And again, God is our model on this. God is constantly listening to us. In fact, the word listen, it's used over 1,500 times in the Bible. 1,500 times in the Bible, the word listen is mentioned. The most frequently voiced complaint, though, in the Bible is that we don't tend to listen, specifically as it relates to God, that we tend to be bad listeners. Isaiah 48:8, the prophet writes this. He says, you have neither heard and you have not understood. From of old, your ears have not been opened to me, right? It seems that perpetually as human beings, we have a little bit of a listening problem, that we tend not to be good listeners. But yet throughout scripture, we see that that's actually a fundamental attribute of God, that God is someone who is eager to listen to us. He never gets tired of listening. And right, for some of us today, that might seem a little bit overwhelming. But again, that's where we draw our strength and our model and our motivation from God himself. Adam McHugh, who's written a really helpful book called The Listening Life, he has this to say about listening. He says, I believe that true listening wars against the entrenched selfishness. That's the film, the entrenched selfishness of the human heart. The listening heart is one that seeks to give and to learn and to welcome and to serve. In a small but real way, listening imitates the self-emptying act of Jesus. So that's, again, what's a way that you practically incarnate God's love? Through listening to your spouse. He voluntarily released his claims on ruling in order to serve and to give his life. The listening heart strives to put away control, all the ways we can manipulate a conversation for our gain. It is able to stop in the middle of a thought and say, you're right. The heart of a listener is one that submits, that begins to live out Paul's exhortation to be subject to one another out of reverence for Christ. The listening heart seeks to be present, to be focused on something other than itself, and to give its attention away. Psychologist David Augsburger writes this. He says, being heard is so close to being loved that for the average person, they're almost indistinguishable. And I found this to be infinitely true in marriage. Oftentimes in marriage counseling, I will just ask a spouse to repeat back to me what their spouse has just said. And you would be surprised, or maybe not surprised, that 9 times out of 10, most spouses can't do it. So after a wife shares something, I'll just look over at the husband. I'll say, hey, could you just repeat back to me or maybe summarize what she just said? And the husband will just stare at me like with, you know, like deer in the headlights type of look and maybe try to make some type of, you know, guess. But what's fascinating is that we inherently are not good listeners. We tend to be easily distracted. We're typically trying to think of the next thing we want to say. We're typically maybe trying to think about an excuse for the behavior that maybe is inciting the conversation. We're thinking about what's for dinner. We're thinking about the game that we're missing. We're thinking about the kids that are so loud in the room next to us. But what we're really not doing is being fully present with our spouse. The French ethicist Simone Weil said that attention is the purest form of generosity. And I find that to be so true, especially in marriage, that perhaps one of the best gifts that you can give your spouse is simply that. It is attentiveness. It's attention, right? That is a way that you give yourself to them. You take something that is yours, right? Your time, your energy, and your resources, and you say, here it is for you, right? So maybe for some of you this morning, the goal is we're going to carve out 5 minutes. And our hope is that maybe 5 becomes 10 and becomes 15 over time. And again, it's not so much about the time frame as much as it is about what you're doing during that time, that you're asking good questions and that you're listening. One of the things, too, that I think can help couples, and we'll just mention it here, is just how we listen with our posture. One of the things that frustrates my wife quite a bit in our relationship is I typically move around a lot, and Jen will be having conversation with me, and I'll just walk away from her. I'll say, well, I'm listening to you, but I'm also doing this, or I'm going here. And she's like, well, why are you walking away from me? I want to talk to you. I want to talk to you face to face. And so one of the things that we've learned in our relationship is that when Jen wants to talk and when I'm trying to listen, that we talk to each other face to face. I don't go into another room. I think in my mind, hey, I can hear you, you know, from the room next door, but that doesn't communicate life and meaning and love to my wife, right? And so when we think about listening, right, this is just a simple tip for husbands and wives is listening with your posture. And one of the things that I talk about in marriage counseling is a simple technique that we call mirroring. And in mirroring, oftentimes what we notice is that we tend to share more and we tend to be more vulnerable when our spouse mirrors our movements and our posture, right? So if you're sitting there like this with your spouse, right, that your spouse is going to read that type of expression, and more likely than not, he or she is going to, again, either good or bad, take that to be somewhat negative, right? You don't want to be here for the conversation. You're sitting there with arms crossed, right? Your teeth are clenched. You're distracted. You keep looking at your watch or you keep looking at your phone. So a part of good mirroring is that we try to mirror the other person's emotions so that if our wife is excited, that we try to embody that. We try to share in that sense of make my joy complete by being of the same mind. If my spouse is emotional or they're crying, I don't want to seem stone-faced or have a flat affect, but that they rightly see that I'm moved and that I'm attentive and that I lean in. Maybe I put my arm around my spouse or that I move towards them. I had a couple in marriage counseling that when I first started with them, they could not have had more distance between them on my couch. I purposely have a love seat in my office so that you really can't have too much distance. But somehow they managed to get a lot of distance between themselves in marriage counseling. And over the balance of the year, one of the more tangible things that I was able to see in terms of growth in their relationship was just they began to move closer towards one another. Instead of talking to me in session, they would talk to each other in session, right? They wouldn't maintain eye contact with just me, but they would maintain eye contact with their spouse. And in one session, it just moved me to tears. But as they were praying, the husband just reached for his wife's hand as they were praying together, right? That's a practical, but a simple way that you can build connection in marriage is by mirroring and by listening to your spouse, especially when it comes to your posture. So all of that being said, in terms of building connection in marriage, those two simple things of asking good questions, of listening and listening intently and listening wisely, right? If you're not doing that now in marriage, I just want to encourage you to do it. It is one of the simplest, but one of the most effective ways that couples can build connection. Again, one of the more common complaints I hear in marriage for couples that have been married a long time is, hey, we just don't know each other. Right? I knew him, you know, 20 years ago when we first started dating, but it's like living with a stranger now. And I always am amazed at how that's happened. You live life together, right? You live maybe at least in the same house together. How do you not know that your spouse? And oftentimes it's because we've gotten lazy. We've gotten lazy when it comes to asking our spouse good questions. Now, I want to make a little bit of a pivot here because in terms of listening and in terms of asking good questions, one of the things I think that can also additionally help us build connection and understanding in our marriage is to understand the role of expectations and desires in our marriage and in our relationships. I will tell you this, unsaid expectations become unmet expectations in marriage. Unsaid expectations become unmet expectations in marriage, meaning when we don't talk about our expectations, when we don't understand expectations and desires in our marriage, it oftentimes leads to conflict. And so there are three different ways, I would say three different primary shaping influences that shape where our desires or where our expectations come from. Now, these three areas, they're all non-moral. And what I mean by that is that when we look at these different charts that I'll show you, it's not as if one side is good and right and righteous, right? And that the other side is bad, sinful, and wrong, right? These are just charts that are showing you differences in family of origin or differences in preference or differences in personality and disposition. One of the primary ways that our desires and our expectations are shaped is just our family of origin, right? How you grew up, right? Your family of origin is significant. It's not determinative. What I'm not saying is that your family of origin determines your expectation, but they definitely have a shaping influence, right? Maybe you came from a really small family and your family just ate meals together every night, and maybe your spouse grew up in a family where you were really spread out and everybody was going one way or another, and it's just kind of dinner on the go, right? You get into marriage, right? You bring in an expectation that is shaped by your family of origin. Maybe the husband expects that, hey, every weekday night, we do what? We sit together as a family. We have a meal together, right? And the wife is coming from a family of origin where, again, it wasn't a big deal if people just ate at different times because her mom just made a meal in a crock pot, set it on the counter, and you just kind of ate whenever you had the chance, right? You can begin to see then how in marriage, right, if we don't have a good foundation, how different expectations then can produce and serve as a context for what? For conflict. Because oftentimes what we tend to do with our expectations is we tend to baptize them into demands, right? We tend to say, well, these expectations now must be fulfilled by you, and my expectations are right. And so family of origin, understanding your family of origin is a critical component. So again, here's a to-do point, you know, for all of you this morning is maybe you just compare family of origin with one another and just give yourself a little bit of a refresher course of, okay, remind me again where you came from. Remind me again of how you grew up. It is shocking to me. I have a couple right now. They've been married for about 20 years. The wife is in ministry. The husband is in logistics and planning. And they just have grown apart in their relationship. They're both highly, highly motivated individuals. Their daughters are about ready to leave for college. And just begin working with the husband, and different things are coming out by way of expectations. And one of the first exercises that we did was just talking about his family of origin and just kind of mapping out his story and his life. And I just said, hey, why don't you share that with your spouse? Why don't you share some of these things? And his wife was surprised to find out quite a few different things that he just assumed that she knew. Things that she assumed, or that he rather assumed that she knew, or at least ways that maybe would impact the way that he would parent or the way that he would do marriage. So this at least is one category of things that shape and tend to shape our expectations, our desires. Second chart. Second thing that shape our expectations is just our personality or our disposition, right? Some of us are more introverted. Some of us are more extroverted. Some of us are more timely and punctual. Some of us just tend to run late. And again, one side is not good and the other side is not bad. One is not sin and the other one is not sin. These are just differences in personality and disposition. When my wife and I first got married, we had lived somewhat independently for quite a while. And my wife was a resident director at her college, and so we lived our first 3 years of marriage in a college dormitory with 80 girls. And so our apartment was fairly compact, and one of our first big arguments was over our closet. My wife obviously had filled up the entire closet with all of her stuff, and so when it came time for me to move, she had to create space for me in the closet. And I remember one of our first big arguments was that when I came in and when I started putting my stuff in the closet, I think it's a biblical mandate that you should have one kind of hanger that all of your clothes should be hung on. I like uniform hangers. White plastic are my strong biblical preference. And my wife doesn't share that, right? I mean, her clothes are like on a bunch of different hangers. I mean, like clothing store hangers that she's just gotten, plastic. I mean, it's just all kinds. And I remember telling her, I'm like, hey, we should rehang all of your clothes and spend some of the gift card money that we got for our wedding and just buy all new hangers. And that just totally shocked her. She was like, why in the world would we spend money for something that we already have? And we had a huge argument and fight over that, right? Why? Because I think, right, based off personality and disposition, that it's good to have all one kind of hanger. I have some OCD-like tendencies, and I want everything to be a certain way. My wife doesn't really care. She just shuts the door, and she's like, nobody sees it, right? Now, we can allow that dynamic, right? We can allow that dynamic in our marriage to produce more conflict, or we can realize that it's simply an expectation that arises out of our personality and disposition. In our new house, we have different sides of the closet, and I think an area of growth in our marriage is that my wife's side looks like how she wants it to, and my side looks like my side, and it's good. We have harmony. We have unity in our marriage. But personality and disposition is another key area. Third one is just likes and dislikes, right? All of us have preferences. We have things that we prefer. But again, oftentimes these expectations become demands on our spouse. So what do we do with them? I want to show you a chart that I use a lot of time in marriage counseling. So in your handout, you'll probably see this diagram. Letter A there stands for the desire or the expectation that you have. It's your want, right? So going back to the illustration that I just used, letter A might be, I want all white hangers, plastic hangers in our closet, right? And letter B is the actual situation or what you get, right? What I get in marriage is I'm married to a wife who doesn't hold that as a biblical mandate, right? She doesn't think that you need to have that. And it's that difference, right? Letter C, between what I want and what I get. This is what I call no man's land in marriage, right? This is where marriages get sanctified. Typically, people do one of two things when they don't get what they want in marriage. You either tend to blow up or you tend to clam up. You either tend to get bigger and get more vocal about your desires or expectations, or you can tend to shut down. The third movement, of which I think Scripture is actually calling us to, is that we don't blow up and we don't clam up, but that we actually speak up, right? That we actually speak truth in love to our spouse. So let me give you another little bit of a story that kind of plays this dialect out and plays out this diagram. So probably a few years ago, I had an opportunity to go down to Florida and to speak at an event. A lot of times, if possible, I do like to bring Jen. I like to bring my wife if we can, you know, arrange childcare and whatnot for our kids. It just so happened that this event was going to be on the same weekend as our anniversary. So I thought to myself, I go, this is going to be great. I'm going to get so many brownie husband points. You know, I'm going to take my wife to Florida with me on this trip. It's going to be our anniversary. We'll tack on a few extra days and we'll just spend some quality time together, right? I'm just setting myself up. This is going to be a great weekend. And one of the things that serves as a source of conflict in my home, not only hangers, but is our difference in driving styles. And I don't know if this is a trouble in your marriage, but my wife and I have very different approaches to driving. So we get into the rental car and we begin to get on the highway. And as I merge, and I think I merge well into this lane of traffic, my wife kind of grabs the handlebar on the rental car and she like kind of braces herself. I'm like, what's wrong? She's like, oh my goodness, you almost ran into that car. And I'm like, no, I didn't. I'm like, it's fine. They were like way behind me. She's like, did you use your signal blinker? I'm like, I think so. I'm like, it's fine. We're, you know, we're moving along. She's like, just be careful, right? She's like, be careful. And internally, I'm starting to get a little frustrated, right? I'm starting to get a little bit irritated, right? Because my expectation, right, for this weekend is that she's going to think that I'm the best husband of all time for planning this amazing event. And I've sacrificed all of this time and effort to make sure that she can come, right? And so as soon as I get into the vehicle, right, what I get from her is not, oh my goodness, look at what a great husband you are. What I get is, oh my goodness, just be careful with your driving. So I think at some point I must have switched lanes again and she makes another comment. She kind of braces herself. I'm like, Jen, like calm down. Like it's not a big deal. And she's like, well, you know, we're in a new area. You just got to be careful. And then I said something very unkind to her. And hopefully husbands, you've never said this. I just said, I go, could you just stop talking? I go, could you just please stop talking and just let me drive, right? So this is on the page of what not to do in your marriage. And she looked at me and she goes, fine. She goes, fine, yeah. I don't need to say anything. And so for the next 55 minutes, and husbands, I know that you know what I'm talking about when you've made this mistake. For the next 55 minutes of the drive, it is just silence, right? Both of us have just, I've blown up, she's clammed up, and now it's just this awkward tension on our wedding anniversary weekend, right, that I've planned. As oftentimes happens, my wife is definitely the more Christ-centered of the two of us, and she moved towards me, and we were able to work it out as we were pulling into our rental. But it was a perfect example of expectations gone bad, right? I have a simple expectation, right? I don't want my driving to be critiqued or to be criticized. I want to be able to do what I want to do. I want to be in control of what I want to be in control of. When I don't get what I want, right, and if I'm not walking in the power of the Holy Spirit, right, what's going to be my tendency? I'm going to blow up. I'm going to be easily angered. I'm going to be given to frustration, right? All of those expectations, is it bad to not want to have your driving critique? No, that's not a bad expectation. But when that expectation begins to rule my heart and begins to inform and shape how I respond to my wife, then absolutely it becomes a problem. So what do we do then with this expectation diagram? I want to give you a couple of things that we can do. Both of them center on what you're able to do, especially as it relates to your expectations. The first thing that you can do when it comes to expectations or desires is you need to ask yourself, is this expectation unbiblical? And if so, then it needs to be removed. Do you have unbiblical expectations of your spouse? If they are, then they need to be removed. Right? You should not have expectations of your spouse that are not biblical. I have a pretty abusive marriage counseling case right now where the husband has told his wife, listen, you cannot go to church. I don't want you coming to church. I don't want you fellowshipping with people. And he is trying to withhold and limit her presence from being able to gather together with God's body. And as we've talked and tried to work through those things, and I've tried to express, that is not a biblical expectation. That is not something that your wife biblically is bound to follow. Now, if it's not unbiblical, then the second point, I think, is a much healthier question for us to evaluate those expectations, and it's this. Is this expectation a product of my own family of origin or personality or disposition or likes or dislikes? If so, how can I hold lightly to them and hold tightly to God's plan, which is my spouse's sanctification? So let's take that driving story, and I'll give you a little bit more insight. My parents are divorced now, and my parents had a high, high conflict relationship. My mom would criticize my dad nonstop. There's probably not a day go by that my mom and dad at some point were not in some level of conflict. My parents could not agree on the color of the sky. If you took them outside right now and said, hey, what do you think the color of the sky is? Ask my mom and ask my dad. They probably would be able to have a fight over it. That's just the environment that I grew up in. And so growing up like that, right, part of my expectations is that I'm very averse to conflict. I'm very averse to criticism, right? When I hear criticism or what I perceive to be critique, it elicits an unhealthy response. I can feel insecure. I can feel attacked. I can feel unloved, right? So when we're driving in the car, right, and my wife makes a comment about my driving, right, that she just sees as like, hey, like I'm just making a comment about your driving. That's what wives do, right? I can take it in a very unkind way. Why? Because of my family of origin. Right? That doesn't excuse my behavior, but it informs my behavior, right? It can help inform my wife. My wife knows this about me, right? And that's why I think in many ways she's able to be so gracious and so compassionate. But understanding where my expectations come from, right? And understanding how those are shaped, what that means is that I have to go into settings like that with my wife and with other people in my life, and I have to hold on to my expectations and my demands very lightly. I tell couples all the time, I say, listen, you need to have open hands before the Lord when it comes to your wants and your desires in marriage. What I most want in my marriage is what? Not my demands, but I want my spouse's sanctification. I want my spouse to become more like Christ. And so if I make my demands and I hold tightly onto them instead of lightly to them, I can miss an opportunity for growth in my spouse's life. That's what you can do with your expectations. You can also, spouses, you can reevaluate your responses. You can reevaluate your responses. Number one, is your response informed by your shared context and your environment, right? Meaning, is there something where if you had better knowledge of your spouse, would maybe that inform how you respond to them? Could you be more gracious or more compassionate, right? So maybe your husband comes home from work, and you're expecting a greeting or a, hey, honey, how was your day? Is there anything I can help you out with? And his immediate thing is that he says, hey, well, what's for dinner, right? And you instinctively feel, you feel unseen and you feel unheard. But out of biblical love, because you know, okay, there might be something in his context or in his day that was hard for him that I don't know about, that maybe is just leading to this response that instead of responding to it, because I know and value what he's doing at work, that leads to a soft response that turns away anger instead of a harsh word. Or maybe it leads to overlooking, right? Number two, is my response informed by what my spouse has gone through today? Just another way to say number one. Is this an opportunity for me to give grace or to overlook in love? Right? In the car, right, when my wife says, hey, be careful, I could have just overlooked that. Right? I did not need to, as the conversation went on, just tell her, hey, please stop talking. It would not have killed me. It would not have been beyond expectation for me to just be able to just overlook that, to be able to cover that up in love. That's not even a sin for her to do that. So in 1 Peter 4:8, where it says, love covers a multitude of sins, you can imagine then that anything that's not a sin, how much more can you cover it up with love, right? If love can actually cover up a sin, the idea then that unmet expectations, you should easily and graciously be able to cover up some of those things. Is my response, is it spirit-filled or is it my flesh demanding what I want? More oftentimes than not, when we think about expectations in marriage, we can be more flesh-led and be more demanding of our expectations rather than spirit-led. Where, again, we see in Philippians chapter 2, right, the model of Jesus Christ is he empties himself, right? He comes in the form of a servant, right? He comes and says, listen, I'm going to prefer other people's interests above my own. Number four, is my response going to help us build peace or break peace? I typically find that in marriage, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, in marriage, we tend to either be peace fakers or peace breakers. And peace breakers is maybe easier for us to understand of like conflict, unkind words to one another, that breaks peace. But I find a lot of times in Christian marriages in particular that we can be peace fakers, right? You might ask your spouse, hey, is everything okay? You just seem kind of tense today. Oh yeah, I'm fine. Right? All of us have had that dynamic, right? Maybe a husband, you walk in into the home and you can just tell something's off or there's been something that's happened. You just ask your wife like, hey, is everything okay? Fine. It's just been a tough day. Well, is there anything I can do? No, right? It's maybe a response that seems to not be leading to conflict, but it's not a true peace. It's a peace faking. Right? It's like a Jeremiah 8:11 where the prophets of Israel were condemned because God says, listen, you have healed the wounds of my people lightly. You have said peace, peace, where there is no peace. We're not supposed to be peacemakers or peace breakers. We're supposed to be peace what? Peacemakers. Blessed are the peacemakers, right? And so when we are going to be making peace with one another, that requires communication. It requires those skills of listening and empathy and connection. And so sometimes, and I'll say this, getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, just having a conflict-free marriage is not necessarily indicative of spiritual health, right? Just because you never fight with your spouse, again, another one of the reasons why I don't enjoy premarital counseling is because premarital people never have any conflict. Everything's great. We never fight. You know, it's just all roses and, you know, it's just everything's coming up great, right? That's not really reality. You're going to get married to a sinner. There's inevitably going to be conflict. And a lot of times when I don't see conflict in marriage, almost always I can trace it back to, it's not necessarily that there's a healthy unity, but they're just accustomed to faking peace, actually in order to self-protect themselves from being hurt or from being misunderstood. So is your response in that moment not going to break peace or to fake peace, but is your response as an opportunity to build peace? Right, is my response to that unmet expectation to say, hey, you know that that when you make that comment, Jen, to me, that I can have a negative reaction, and I know that I shouldn't, but you need to help me here. I need your help to have better, more Christ-like responses, right? That would have been a better way for me to go about that particular incident. Number six, you know, at the end of the day, am I trying to conform my spouse into my image or into the image of Christ, right? And my desire to just have Jen stop talking, I guarantee you that was not what Christ wanted for her in that moment, right? I was trying to do what? I was trying to make her more into my image, not into the image of Christ. And so when we think about expectations and we think about how we get them, where they come from, and the role that they play in our marriage, I want you to take all of what we've talked about, because in our next session on conflict, a lot of that is going to come into play. So some discussion questions that we can work through before our next break. Number one, how would you rate your listening and empathy skills in marriage? Where can you grow in this area? You know, here's a simple question that I think you could probably be brave enough to ask is, just ask your spouse, am I a good listener in our marriage? Am I a good question asker in our marriage? And be willing to receive whatever response is given. Hopefully, right, if you're, let's say on a good day, like most of you might be in a positive spot of health, maybe you tell your husband, I think you have room to grow. You're not a great listener, but I don't think that you're a bad listener. Then hopefully a follow-up question might be, well, where can I grow? What do you need more from me? And what is it when I ask you the questions? Is it how I ask you? Is it a certain type of question, right? I know one wife who tells me that it just frustrates her when her husband comes home and says, how was your day? He has always thought that that is a perfectly acceptable question. In her mind, right, she goes, listen, you know what my day is like to some degree. I have 5 kids. I'm running ragged. I'm taking Bobby to soccer practice. I'm trying to do, you know, online schooling and hybrid. I'm doing Bibles. It's hard. Every day is hard. And they would almost always get into conflict where he's thinking he's asking a good question and she's offended by that. So it's just re-asking questions, right? Saying, well, if that's not a good question, then what would be? And you know what she told him? She said, the best question you can ask me when you come home is, how can I be of help? How can you help me? And that's, you know, that's the question now that he has started to ask, and it has been transformative in their relationship. It's led to unity and connection. He just didn't know for 10 years. Every time they'd have a conflict when he came home, he always thought that he had done something wrong, but it was more the question that he was asking. So how would you rate your listening and empathy skills? And again, husbands, listen, right? Listen to those answers. Number two, do you feel like your spouse knows and understands you? And I would just ask that question at a very simple level. Don't try to complicate it. Some of you might say, yeah, I actually do. I actually do think that my spouse knows me, and kudos to you. But I would think that there are probably some couples here where if you were to answer that question honestly, you might say, no, I don't. I think at one point we did, but I think that we've let some time grow between us. And I think there are parts of me that I don't feel comfortable sharing. There are parts of me that you don't seem interested in that, yeah, we don't know each other as well as we should. And so again, the opposite question is, well, what don't I know? And how do I get to know more about that? What's one question you wish your spouse asked you more? Right? That kind of gets us back to that, you know, how can I be of help? You know, what's one question that you wish your spouse asked you more? Here's a question that, you know, I will say ad nauseum is a great question is, how can I pray for you? I hope that every time we ask our spouse, how can we pray for each other, that builds connection. Right, that builds intimacy together because you're communicating and expressing need. Here's another question that I could ask all of you. Do you know how to pray for your spouse? Do you? Do you know your spouse well enough, their joys, their difficulties, their besetting sins, the things that easily entangle them, that keep them from running the race that is set before them? Do you know those things in order to be able to pray wisely and thoughtfully? I know that there have been times in my marriage where I've not been able to answer that question wisely, right? And so maybe that's a question that you ask. How can I pray for you? What are ways that you can build healthy connection in marriage, right? Healthy connection in marriage, both spiritually, physically, intimately. What are ways that you guys can do that? We've just talked about two of them today, listening and asking good questions. Are there other areas where you would say, hey, I would feel more connected to you if we did X, if we engaged in this, if we experienced this together? So with that being said, let's do this. Let's take a brief break. Our goal is to come back at around 11, And the worship team will gather us back together, and our last session before lunch is going to be addressing conflict. And we'll talk about where conflict comes from and how do we deal with it in relationships. So we'll entrust you in your conversation to that, and we'll gather back together. Pastor